Accession number 18269, Reel 2.
Jim Dale, Reel 2.
Right. Yes, I was lying flat on my back and watching these planes going over. I wasn't myself really worried, but I did think, well, I wonder what on earth's going to happen if they all arrive there. It must make a most awful mess of the place. But funnily enough, I was not worried. And evidently, the fighters from Biggin Hill, mostly, must have given these bombers a pretty good beating up, because we never saw any of them coming back in formation. They were mostly odd ones and twos, and on one occasion I remember seeing one quite low down, streaming black smoke, but it apparently got away across the channel. On another occasion, when we were doing some sort of field exercise near Ditchling, Ditchling Junction, I think it was called, we were crossing a golf course, and all of a sudden we heard a frightening rushing noise in the air. This turned immediately into a shower of incendiary bombs, which some retreating bomber had just let loose, presumably thinking it might do a bit of harm to us. Actually, no one was hurt at all. And on the same day, we saw another bomber very low down, and a couple of parachutists jump out just before it went out over the sea. I should think that last one must have crashed into the channel ultimately.
But these columns of German bombers looked a disciplined force. The columns of German bombers that you described earlier seemed a well-organized and disciplined force.
Oh yes, they certainly they kept formation as far as I could see them. And that, I think, is about really just covers the ground of my view of the Battle of Britain. After that, we just did some more training, but quite frankly, I can't remember learning anything very much, despite these 4 months at the Octu. But at the end of it all, we were asked which regiments we'd like to be posted to, and so I selected the Queen's Royal Regiment, being a West Surrey regiment, thinking that with a bit of luck I might know people from that area. And much to my surprise, I was granted a commission into the Queen's.
This was still in 1914?
Yes, this would have been November 1914.
What happened to you then?
I had to go straight to the regimental depot in Guildford, where I stayed for about a month, giving a little bit of infantry training, although we weren't given platoons to command. But we're only there for 4 weeks when we received overseas postings. And my only recollection of that time was that I was just before the end of December, I went to see my fiancé and mother to say goodbye to them. And driving back from Dorking into Guildford by bus, one could see a huge red glow in the sky over the top of the North Downs. And that was evidently the night when the Germans really set fire to the greater part of the East End. The next morning, we had to go up to Liverpool. I remember being on Guildford Station about 9 o'clock in the morning. It was rather cold, very dull grey day, and absolutely no one about. So that it was anything but a cheerful occasion. However, we evidently got to Waterloo without any delays in the train. Similarly, we crossed London without any trouble and finished up in the day to find ourselves billeted in Highton Golf Club near Liverpool. I can't remember much about that. I seem to remember going into Liverpool itself for a drink at the principal hotel. I've forgotten the name of it for the moment, but it was the leading hotel. And the other recollection is simply that we were invited to a New Year's party at the golf club, and I personally was very surprised when the ladies, anyway, went around kissing everybody, friend or not, which to me was something rather surprising.
Something shocking?
Not quite shocking, but surprising.
So you were waiting to board a ship in Liverpool?
Yes, that's right. yes, 2 days later, we went down to the docks and went on board North Atlantic liner, Cunard Line Britannic.
What was it like in that ship?
Well, the ship itself was hadn't really been converted in any way, and it was really luxuriously comfortable for the officers anyway. While we were still in port, the one thing I do remember was that it was a foggy morning, and all you could see of Liverpool were the two liver birds on the top of the liver building. And that stuck in my memory as being what I thought might be the last glimpse of England. And I have done from memory, a personal sketch of that little scene. A day or two later, we moved round to what I was told was Red Wolf Bay, off the Isle of Anglesey. And I think we stopped there for 3 or 4 days, quite fine weather. And then we started off in earnest and sailed out past the Western Isles of Scotland, which was interesting to see. The countryside, but all the hills were all various shades of brown and dull green, and here and there you could see an odd crofter's white cottage. And then, of course, we got out into the North Atlantic, which was being early January. Sea and sky were both hard, cold grey. And with the movement of the ship as well going westwards, rather a cold wind as well. And we were a batch of unattached officers with no troops to look after, and so we had to perform one or two odd duties, like nighttime fire watch, accompanied by the ship's armourer. Fortunately, we had no alarms of submarine attacks. The convoy seemed to be quite lucky in that respect. An interesting point was that apart from the destroyer escorts, we had a battleship right in the centre of the convoy. But after a few days, that peeled off and we assume went off into Gibraltar. The convoy itself called in a free town without any further alarms, and we stayed there for about 3 or 4 days, but we were not allowed to go ashore. And my only recollections of Freetown really were the natives in their cut-out canoes trying to sell fruit to the troops on board ship, but since we couldn't get near them, there wasn't much trade done. I think I seem to recall that they were quite happy to dive into the water to pick up coins before they reached the bottom. And as for Freetown, my really only recollection is that practically all the buildings seem to have corrugated iron roofs. The next port of call was Durban. We were there for about 3 days. Lots of people on the ship were, of course, invited out by local families for a day ashore. Somehow or another, another officer whose name I can't remember and myself seemed to have missed out on this. These invitations, and so we got a taxi and took ourselves up to what was called the Valley of a Thousand Hills, apparently a tourist site some 10 miles outside Durban. I was quite impressed by the scenery there, and again, from memory, did a little watercolour sketch of the scene. After 3 days in Durban, and incidentally, I didn't see or hear or know anything at the time about the lady in white who used to sing as the troopships went out. Well, we continued, obviously, northwards from Durban, but we ourselves really had no idea where we might be going. But in the end, after about a week, we finished up in Suez on a very cold, grey day. in Suez, Queen's officers, anyway, there were about six or seven of us, were kept on board ship for about 4 days, just doing nothing. And in that time, we did notice the arrival of three, what we were told were high-speed merchant ships. And little did we know that not very far ahead, we ourselves would be on one of those, i.e. the Glen Roy. we were kept in the base. When we went ashore, we were kept for a week or two in the infantry base depot at Geneva, which is on the Great Salt Lake sector of the Suez Canal. There, I can't remember doing anything very much in particular, but I do remember being on a mortar range, 3-inch mortar range, and after our exercise, we started picking up unexploded 3-inch mortar bombs, which were lying around, thinking we were doing some good. But after past experience, I realised that was an incredibly stupid thing to do. However, after a few more days, we were posted to the 2nd Battalion of the Queen's, which was then in rest camp. It's a place called El Tahag. And there I was posted to B Company. under Captain Hull, and allocated number 12 platoon. while we were there, the the only place we could go to was Ismailia on the Suez Canal. And there, evidently, the great thing to do was to buy yourself a pair of
is this an item of clothing?
Yes. Yes.
Where is it worn?
Yeah, well, yes, was to buy what they call desert boots. can't forget the name of this sort of finish.
Don't worry, might come back to you later.
No. Yes, we'll do. Anyway, to buy a pair of desert boots, which were crepe leather soles and heels. This was because in the open desert, both there and elsewhere, it was quite impossible to preserve shining, clean shoes or boots. After about a week, we were sent as a battalion to the bottom end of the Great Salt Lake with the intention of undertaking some assault landing exercises. And because of this, all the battalion transport was placed elsewhere. However, before we'd really started any assault landing training, we were suddenly put on a train and overnight, we found ourselves going up the Western Desert, and somewhere around about midday, we found ourselves at funny how these names won't come.
Don't worry about it. Might come back to you later.
Mersamatru. Yes, we arrived at Mersamatru and were immediately dispersed around the town. Which at the time was the railway terminus. I was allocated a concrete pillbox, which when inspected inside, found the walls were literally coated from floor to ceiling with what we loosely call bed bugs. And so it wasn't long before I myself, at least, was billeted in an unoccupied house near the lagoon. nothing much happened in Mersamatru itself. We were there in case the Germans attempted a pincer movement and came in off the desert away to the south. after a day or two, my platoon at least was transferred a few miles further west to a place, or location to be more correct, known as Charing Cross, which at that time was the terminal of the water pipeline into the Western Desert.
Which month was this, do you think?
This would have been April.
What did you find at Charing Cross?
At Charing Cross, there was really nothing except about a dozen outlets from the water pipe. This was located in a wadi, so that it couldn't be seen from any distance. And I myself had a tent on the sides of this wadi, which couldn't be seen from the general level of the desert. Apparently someone had been there before, because he found stone sangers on the level open desert, and I always thought that that seemed, someone's rather silly about that, because they could quite well have concealed themselves out, behind the edge of this wadi. However, nothing happened there, and then we were drawn eastwards of Merzimetru, and the whole battalion was distributed around satellite landing grounds for the RAF.
Was there any active work to be done defending those airstrips?
No, there was nothing to be done, really. We were simply allocated. My own platoon was allocated a saucer-like area in the open desert with some sandstone hills around the edge. But all we were able to do, we were told to dig in and dig in section groups. But in actual fact, the stone was so hard that we could make no impression whatsoever. And so we simply had to rely on making trenches in loose sand. Anyway, nothing happened there. Full stop. The next thing is that we got moved back. The whole battalion was moved back to a staging camp just outside Alexandria. And then it would have been fairly early May. We went into Alexandria Harbour and we put aboard ship the commando boat Glen Roy.
Did you know where you were going to?
No, we didn't know where we were going to. Because so much was happening at short notice in that part of the world at the time, that it could have been almost anything. We could have been going almost anywhere. However, we set sail, and evidently during the course of the voyage, we were told that we were set to go to Crete. We knew the Germans had invaded Crete, so it then became pretty obvious from the direction the ship was going in. And this was quite